Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. And now, here's your host, Rick Ingram.
All right, guys, welcome back. Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. Just got back in the country, checked things out over in Europe. Not going great over there. Not going great over here. But, you know, we're here today. Things are good. Is everyone in focus? Do we look good? Fuck yeah. We're changing the name of this podcast specifically to Two Dudes in V-Necks, and we're going to keep it real the whole fucking time. My first guest today is YJ. How do I say your last name?
Haw.
Haw?
Yeah.
Just Haw.
Yeah, it's like H-E-O. E-O is kind of like a Spanish diphthong.
Okay.
Like two, yeah, it's like, I don't know why they did that, but they did that a while ago.
And what nationality is that?
Korean.
That's Korean.
Yeah.
Thing I know about Koreans, when I first moved to LA,
okay,
first group of friends I made were almost all Koreans.
Okay.
Unbelievably racist. And it was an eye-opening experience for me.
They can be certainly very racist.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I find now most people in the world are some level of racist, but
yeah.
They were just very comfortably racist.
I see. Yeah, they have some prejudice that,
yeah,
you know, it's a kind of an insular country.
Yeah.
Right. So everyone else looks like an alien to them.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
I support all levels of hatred as long as it's, you know, for a specific thing and not just a general hatred. Okay. So YJ, do you just go by YJ because it's hard to say your name?
Yeah, well, it's short. It's not short for Young June because it's the same length as far
as sound. Yeah, in theory, yeah.
But I grew up in Indiana.
Oh, yeah, that'll do
so
it.
So it's like, yeah, it was like Young June and then YJ. And then in college, friends would say Wyge to shorten it even more.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so, how lazy people in college are.
Right. At some point, I might not have a name because it's just shortening.
This can be like, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So growing up in Indiana, how large is the Asian population? What were you in Indianapolis or
no,
et cetera?
Well, I was born in Indianapolis, but
okay,
my father is a professor.
Okay.
So he was a grad student until I was 12.
Wow.
Yeah. And so younger brother and I, mom, dad, and he eventually got a job at the University of Southern Indiana.
Okay.
Which is in Evansville. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I'm somewhat familiar. I've heard of the college, but
yeah.
So what, tell us about Evansville. What's that like?
So I say Evansville, but I'm actually from Newburgh.
Okay.
Which is like even smaller.
That's an outskirt of
A town you don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. It was nice, and I think it was like a really good, mostly good experience, nice and slow. People are really friendly.
Right.
Once they get to know you.
Sure.
Not very many Asian people or minorities in general.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a whites dominated.
Yeah. I mean, there were like, I remember in high school, there were like KKK events.
Yeah.
Like in the town over.
Yeah.
But the news would like report it like it was, I don't know, like
just an out of control.
It was nonchalant. Yeah, it was just like, yeah, this is what happened today. It's like, you know, and I used to be like, oh, this is like bizarre, but
yeah,
it is kind of.
It's. I grew up in a similar kind of place. There was. I went to a. I grew up in the suburbs of Kansas City, but there was. We were very close to the country, and so my school was mostly suburban white kids. We had maybe 100 to 150 minorities out of 2,000 kids.
Yeah.
And then I would say about 300 to 400 very redneck whites.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would park their trucks in the back of the parking lot with their Confederate flags. And their,
yeah, yeah. Lots of Confederate flags.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't actually think the kids really know what that is. You know,
I don't either.
It's just passed down.
It's a tradition thing.
Yeah.
And
they think it looks cool.
I remember some of them would say, well, you know, it's about being a rebel against the government. I'd be like, is that what it's about? Is that really what you think it's about?
Yeah.
But I do recall there was a lot of chatter because someone from a local branch or whatever it is of the KKK passed out flyers to that specific portion of the parking lot, knowing like go to our demographic.
Yeah.
And so it was like a recruitment thing, like to get them in there.
Well, you got to get in early, right?
Yeah.
So
otherwise they can't trust you. You know, you might be out there working for these libs.
Right. Right. You don't want to do that.
There's nothing worse than that. I mean, say what you will about hating groups of people for, you know, race or religion. Mm-hmm. It's really about getting those libs and owning those libs.
100%.
So that's really what was going on where I was growing up. But it is a weird thing, like just for the casualness of people being like, oh yeah, we got this hate group.
Yeah. But you know,
shindigs.
I did see like there was a change among like my group of friends or like my brother's group of friends.
Yeah.
And I think initially like the response is, oh, you're not like those others that we think about.
Right.
And so I think that's the first step. And I think that eventually they realize, oh, it's kind of arbitrary. So like,
right,
I should probably just treat everyone well.
I mean, I'd like to think that's what they get to. I don't know that most of them are,
but
some of them definitely are.
Yeah, I mean, I will say my close group of high school friends, very open-minded.
Right.
Like, maybe they weren't originally. Maybe their families weren't.
Right.
But eventually they, like, come around.
Yeah.
It takes a generation, unfortunately.
But, yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was, I think she was Taiwanese, but her dad was very unhappy that any of us were friends with her. Like, I would call her house and be like, you know, is she there? And he'd go, who's this? And I'd go, this is Rick. And he'd go, oh. And I just remember being like, what is that?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
she'd be like, oh, just ignore him. He's just, he wants me to hang out with Asian guys. I was like, oh, okay.
Probably not Asian guys, probably nobody.
The father part of it, he was probably just like, why is anyone calling my daughter?
Yeah.
But she eventually did, because I'm just like, does he hate me? And she's like, no, she hates all of you.
Yeah,
I'm
oh. Equally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think maybe if the KKK knew that there was an element of racism in Asian cultures, they would be way more accepting.
Oh, I see. That would be a tricky thing to.
Yeah, he'd be like, look, we all kind of hate. And they'd be like, oh, okay, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't realize that there was racism in other races until I moved to LA. And then I found out everyone just hates. I know it's a weird thing to talk about. I worked in a shipping department where I was the only white guy. Everyone else was black dude. And for 6 months, I was just like, my dear God. The shit that would be said on a daily basis. Yeah. And I'm just like, I don't think I can go to HR and complain without them being like, are you being racist, Rick? I'm like, I'm not, I swear. They said a lot of horrible things about me. All right, so you grow up in Indiana. Mm-hmm. How big of a high school are we talking about?
I mean, I don't think it was small because it was like the whole area.
Yeah.
But it was like town of 30,000.
Okay.
And then maybe class size was like 400 or 500.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's a decent size high school. Mm-hmm. And then what did you do? What was your thing? Were you into sports? Did you?
I played soccer.
Okay.
Lots of soccer. I mean, that's mostly what we did.
Yeah.
Like sports.
And
then had a girlfriend at the time.
Nice.
That's mostly
that takes
did.
All your time.
Yeah,
you play one sport and have a girlfriend, that'll do it.
Yeah, that'll.
All right, and so then I know you went to college in Philly. Where'd you go to school?
I went to a small school called Swarthmore.
Swarthmore?
Yeah, it's like maybe it's like Pomona is like the happy version.
Okay.
But Swarthmore is like out east. So a little bit grayer.
Yeah.
Right?
I would say.
People are a little bit. In Phil, you know, Philly people are.
Oh, I'm very familiar with Philly people.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you could fit in. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, my other podcast, my co-host Eleanor is from Philly.
That's right.
And a lot of my friends, I know a lot of comics who are from Philly, and so it's weird because comics in general were terrible people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have this like skewered view of all these cities where I'm just like, oh, just absolute monsters.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh, you know what? That's probably just the four savage comedians that I know from that area.
Right. You take the population, you get the worst people.
Yep. Move them to LA.
Yeah. You become the comics.
We truly do have the worst of every city in America. Yeah. We're like, send us the worst you have.
Yeah.
And what did you study in college?
So I studied biology and public policy.
Okay. Yeah, that's a weird combo.
Right. So I was on my way to becoming, to going to med school. That was the plan.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
And how much of this is influenced by your parents telling you you need to go to med school?
Honestly, it's tough to gauge. It's tough to figure out when that started.
Yeah.
But I do... I really enjoyed that type of learning.
Yeah.
It was, like, difficult and, you know, it was challenging and I enjoyed that. But what happened was when I was in college, I started this public health... nonprofit NGO in Venezuela. Kind of random.
Wow, okay.
The school had a lot of funding. They basically threw money at students to say, hey, like, if you have interesting ideas, like, go and...
change the world.
Go and pursue them,
yeah. Right?
And so I started this organization, and this was, you know, this was like 2006, 2007.
Okay.
And what had happened was, what started out as a way to bring resources there became this organization. And I realized that I really liked that kind of starting up, like having an idea and then to work to try to make the idea happen and then seeing the idea happen. Like that, I realized was...
That's your passion.
Yeah, the thing that I loved.
Okay.
Right? I think like the medicine and that aspect of it is... fine and interesting, but I also saw there being like a 10-year path, and I would miss out on, and I don't know if you know, remember when Facebook kind of became a thing.
Yeah.
But at the time, startups weren't a big thing. Like people weren't like joining startups in 2005, 2006, right? So
the dream of starting something and selling it for a ton of money wasn't grasping America.
Right. Well, people didn't know that, right?
Yeah.
We didn't have like stories online of you know, the rises and falls of whomever.
Right.
And so there's this weird thing that happened where I had when I had this organization, like I had this best friend from high school who's a genius. Computer guy, genius. And I was like, hey, Mason, can you make us a website? And he was like, I'm not a web programmer. You know? And I was like, whatever.
You're a genius,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, whatever, man. Figure it out, right?
By the way, Mason, terrific.
Yeah.
Genius guy name.
Oh, yeah. Just absolutely.
You're just like, something's up with Mason. He's going to figure some shit out.
Totally.
Yeah.
So he said, I'll do it. I'll figure it out. Fine. But you have to like design the site. So give me like a design and I'll like make it happen.
Okay.
So I was like, all right, fine. Feels fair. So I like downloaded Photoshop. This was 2007. And I like put some rudimentary design together and I gave it to him. He got it done in a few days. Great.
Wow.
Put up the website. He like added some trackers onto it so you could see where people were coming from. And like a month later, we got this call from the Clinton Foundation. Okay. So ignoring all the political stuff about that.
Sure.
They had called, and you know, I'm just this kid from Southern Indiana.
Yeah.
Right. And they had called and they were like, hey, like President Clinton is going to be presenting at this conference in New York. Like, are you free at the end of the week to like come up? Right.
Sure. Very normal.
Right. So I was like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah.
Right. Like, this is crazy. Right.
Yeah.
And I, at first I was like, this can't be real. So, like, you know, they send me the ticket information and I'm like, okay, I'm like going to go up. So I go up to New York City and like, I see the man himself and, you know, everyone's like, you can tell why he became president, right?
Charismatic.
Just. I mean, everyone, like Matt Damon is like drooling.
Yeah.
You know, like he's like, right. Everyone is impressed.
Yeah.
And so I shake his hand, I meet him. He's like, oh, you're from Swarthmore. And then he like, I think. Part of his charisma is he's like, oh yeah, like I had a law school classmate from Swarthmore, blah, 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 blah. And he's just rattling off
He can relate to anybody.
Just anything. So yeah. I just felt like I was the only person in his life. I was like,
you and Bill, best friends. Mason's out.
Bye, Mason.
Bill's here
just
now.
Just kicking it.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is just insane.
Yeah. Right?
And I attribute it to having put out that site because, not, you know, there are lots of impressive college kids doing crazy things, but another part of it is like marketing yourself and marketing whatever you're doing. And at the time in 2007, not very many people were like putting themselves out there like that. So
yeah.
If you weren't on the web, you really didn't exist, right?
Yeah. Social media wasn't there for self-promotion.
That's right.
And,
that's right. It wasn't like, you know, I wasn't able to like TikTok dance build my way
to
Bill.
Right? 200,000 yeah. people. Yeah.
Right. So I was just like, okay, like this is like, it's a slap me in the, I'd taken the web for granted my entire life and it just slapped me in the face like, dude, you are an idiot if you don't like
capitalize on this,
right? And so because of that, there are these programs that like pay for you to like live abroad for a few years or a year or a few years and they just let you do whatever you want. Okay, like they set you up with something. It's either like academic or like some experiential thing.
What do you have to do to qualify for this? Just have a good idea or?
So, I mean, they look for leadership qualities or whatever. So in college, I was on the track team for 4 years. I started this organization. I ran the student government. And so I did all
you're checking the boxes.
I did all those things you hate, right? Yeah. But so I did those things. They selected me. And I lived in Vietnam for a year and Ireland the year after.
Okay, and that's an interesting combo.
Right, those 2 years just gave me time to teach myself how to design.
Oh, okay.
So that's what it was. It was like, okay, like I'm going to go. I'm like that entire time, like I'm going to go to medical school. My parents are calling me up like, what's going on? Like,
well, why is being a doctor on hold?
Right, you're already in Vietnam. Like, great. Like, we're glad you got this thing.
Sure.
Like, you know, now you're going to
get it out of your system.
Yeah, that's right. And so they were like, so when's medical school going to happen? You know, and I'm just like, yeah, don't worry. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to go.
Yeah. It's, all in time,
yeah,
mom and dad.
It's all good.
This is just a part of the plan to, you know, get a well-rounded experience at life.
Yeah. I mean, they're looking at my younger brother and he's like, I'm not going to be a doctor. You know? Like, and so they're just like, you know, it's a Korean immigrant family. They're just, you got to have one.
Right.
Right. So
there needs to be bragging rights to other Korean families.
That's 100% right.
Yeah.
That's right. So I was supposed to be the one.
Yeah.
And brutal disappointment.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah, this is, I mean, now they got to pretend like, you know, you're going through something.
Right.
Maybe a woman.
Make up some stories, whatever it is.
Yep.
Yep. So.
Wow. Okay. And so then computers become your thing.
Yeah. Well, like the design side. You know, if you're going to work in 2008, 2009, 2010, you're like, okay, if you're going to work in startups and you want to be useful, you don't want to be like the idea guy.
But no skill, yeah.
And you don't want to be like, hey.
Good save, by the way, now.
Well, gotta. Right.
No one who listens to this podcast is going to try and cancel us.
So, you know, you have to like, you have to contribute something if you're at the ground level.
Yeah, otherwise they're going to be like, we got to figure out how to basically choke them out.
That's right. You're going to get shoved out.
Yeah.
You know? So I was like, okay, like front-end design, back-end development, what's more comfortable? And I'd already been doing design stuff. So I was like, okay, I'll like focus in on that. And so I spent 2 years like studying for the MCAT and teaching myself how to design.
Wow.
Yeah, it was actually a lot of fun though.
Yeah.
I mean.
You had a passion for it. You enjoyed it.
And how many times in your life is somebody going to be like, hey, go ahead and travel the world.
Right.
Make best friends with people.
Yeah.
And, you don't need to worry about money.
Yeah. It's a pretty sweet deal.
It was a crazy deal.
Yeah.
So yeah, the first one was this thing called the Loose Scholars Program. And it was, started by Henry Luce's foundation. He was the Time Magazine guy.
Okay.
He started that in the 30s. And so, that, you know, they have a ton of money to do that. It was started because a bunch of we went to war in Vietnam, and
I've heard about that.
Right. And
do they hate us over there, or do they like us?
They don't.
No.
They
okay.
do not. Honestly, they don't even. I mean, it's confusing because I'm like representing America in a way, but I look Korean.
Right.
So they're, you know, if I'm asking questions about Americans, I don't know if they're.
They're not registering automatically. Like this guy could be.
That's right. It's like confusing to them. But I do think they think in terms of like long term history, and in their minds they won.
Yeah.
So they're just like, yeah, you tried, and
they got the upset victory over America.
That's right. That's so, right. And so they're like, yeah, whatever. It's not a big deal. So you know, that's kind of.
I was in France like a week and a half ago, and I met a Vietnamese person who lives there, and I asked them, I said, so do you hate Americans? And he was like, well, no, I don't, but I'm sure some of my older relatives probably do, but most of our hatred is focused on the French.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I went, oh, okay.
It was a longer period.
They kind of ruled over, not in a kind way, I guess, for...
Yeah.
Some period of time. So that's really our dabbling in Vietnam only lasted that's common knowledge anyway for like a decade.
The French had the opportunity to rule.
Yeah.
Whereas the US
like they were over there, you know, mistreating people and that kind of thing. And we were helping them. I now understand the American government is always involved in mistreatment of wherever people are, yeah, I was fast. I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, but you're here in Paris. And he's like, well, yeah, I don't care. I was born in 1993. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so that program was started because they thought, oh, Americans don't know anything about Asia.
Okay.
And like causes us to have these big
misconceptions,
misunderstandings.
Yeah. Right.
So originally it was like for... Americans who didn't have any experience in Asia, and I happen to be Asian, but I had not gone to Asia. I had not had.
You grew up in Southern Indiana.
That's right.
So,
so it was like, you know, like I went fishing on the weekend.
Yeah, this is a wild card. This might be best
more,
of both worlds.
Yeah. I'm a little bit more American than some of these like East Coast kids, you know. So yeah, I did that, and then in Ireland there's this. Scholarship program called the Mitchell Scholarship, and that's how I got to Ireland. Totally different programs, but I got a public health degree there at University College Dublin.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So.
What's did you have crazy? This is like college, basically, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was like a free.
You're going through some sort of a university program
that's
in both places.
That's right. But school's like pretty. I think university is like relatively cheap there.
Right.
So like a lot of people who do qualify to be in master's programs, whatever,
just go there.
Yeah, they just go.
Did you have wild experiences in Vietnam or Ireland? I mean, Ireland, I know everyone's just smashed and people are like, that's a stereotype. And I'm like, no, if you want it.
They can really throw it back.
Yeah. They enjoy going to the pub and.
Yeah.
They take it as far as they can.
Yeah, I had asked a classmate of mine in the program in Ireland, and I had asked her, like, so, like, how do people, like, here date? Like, how does that happen? Because I'd asked somebody out.
Right.
And that person was, like, horrified, maybe. I mean, that could have been, that could have been because it was me.
Yeah.
But she was saying, oh, you just kind of go out at night and you get smashed. And then, you know, if something happens, then the next morning you kind of wake up and go, what are we going to do about this?
Yeah. So we did that.
Yeah. So I said, isn't that kind of like
date
the
rape?
Wrong order?
Yeah. Yeah. That's how it worked for the last 2,000 years,
okay,
at least.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Right. That is what has happened. Yes.
Yeah.
But
so it's changed in the last 10 years. But prior to that, that was the deal.
I thought it'd be nicer to just have a meal with someone.
Ask someone out.
Yeah.
It's more of a traditional 1950s American way. Like, say there, maybe we can have dinner at your parents' house.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was you know, it was very, it was a free time. It was, you know, and Vietnam was different because the nightclubs were illegal. Okay, like it was like a totally weird setup. Okay, the nightclubs were illegal. So, but what would happen is the clubs would bribe the, not to tell on any of the night, not to narc on the nightclubs here, right?
Yeah. They're not listening to this podcast either.
the government goes and sanctions them. They like lock them down.
We
right
heard
now.
On Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. I'm like, I have government officials.
Yeah. They're on to this. It would be this weird situation where these clubs would exist, but then and all the expats would be there, and some of the Vietnamese would be there, but of course there are many workers there, people just coming through, and that you would like see the bribes happen, like the club owners would be bribing off the police officers, but you weren't supposed to be there, so it was just this odd circumstance of.
You're just hoping everyone pays the right people.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It was just bizarre. There were a lot, but then the other thing was like, you know, there's a lot of other types of crime maybe that happens where there's like gangsters there and
sure.
They're doing their own thing.
Yeah, this is how a lot of the world operates.
Absolutely.
Like
right.
Nightclubs and that kind of scene, after hour parties, all that stuff is mostly illegal in the world.
Well, what you experienced in Paris probably last week.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Paris was, I don't know that I've ever been somewhere where it was so crowded everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
With just the rudest human beings of all time. I mean, America has a reputation for being rude, but I feel like...
Uh-huh.
The French made that up because they were like, we don't, this way people won't think it's us.
I see.
But they were tremendously rude.
How so? Like, would they?
Just like I'm walking around trying to find places to eat. I don't speak French at all.
Right.
And I don't want to be that asshole American who's just like, hey, speak English.
Yeah.
So I'm doing my best to try and be like, I'm like pointing at stuff on menus.
But you know they know English.
I know. Twice I heard them speaking English and then asked them a question and they literally were like, oh no, sorry, I don't know. I'm like,
I'm sorry, I can't articulate these points to you.
Yeah, I'm like, I just heard you talking to that person. And they're like, oh no. I was like, this motherfucker. So then I, at that point I was like, all right, now I'm pissed.
Uh-huh.
And in my mind, I go full nuclear war immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no slow build up for me. I'm immediately just like, fuck, we shouldn't have saved them in WW2.
Freedom fries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of that.
Yeah.
I'm so mad. We're taking French toast back. That's now freedom toast.
That's right.
I'm not putting up with any of this bullshit anymore. I'm now pro German in any sort of soccer match at least.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, definitely not pro Nazi. I don't want anyone to think that.
Right.
But at the same time, I could use a little appreciation for what we did WW1 and 2. You know, these people wouldn't be speaking French anymore if we didn't get in there. And all I want is to know whether there's mayonnaise on the sandwich so that I can order it without. But
yeah,
I get it. You don't speak English suddenly.
Yeah, yeah.
As a crowd, they were great.
Mm-hmm.
Like for comedy, I'm like, this might be weird.
Mm-hmm.
We were in England before that, and I'm like asking, like, yeah, what's it going to be like in France? And I'm like, oh, it's going to be mostly Americans and Brits.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't. It was like 70-80% French people.
Mm-hmm. Nobody smacked you.
No one's smacking me.
Okay.
They all, you know, I'll say this. It's weird. I say a lot of horrible things as a comedian.
Uh-huh.
And people laugh. I see people look uncomfortable. Uh-huh. Like, that's what I'm used to. French culture is so theater-based that they, when they laugh, they also clap. And so I would say something horrible. And they all would start clapping. And it kept making me smile on stage. So I'm just like, this is such an absurd thing. I'm like literally baiting people into hatred. And then they would all laugh and clap.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is how Trump became Trump.
Yeah.
He just started saying terrible things.
Right.
And in America, people are actually terrible. So they actually are clapping for the terribleness.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, this is great. And, you know, just tried to ruin the earth.
Rick, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Were you, when I was in high school, were you at those KKK rallies giving the...
I was in charge.
Yeah.
My territory was Kansas City to Southern Indiana.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would say a majority of the people that I've hated in this world have been trash whites. Like, that's the worst group of humans still to this day I've ever known. So it's hard for me to, like, I just could never buy into white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about it on stage sometimes. Mm-hmm. No one has ever given me an example of what we're supreme at this point. It's never the good whites who are white supremacists. It's not like Tom Brady is preaching, like, look how fucking superior we are. Because if he did, people would be like, yeah, he's pretty good. But it's never that guy. It's always the dude who's, like, the worst employee at Jiffy Lube.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, why do you think, what convinced you that white people are supreme?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's kind of, he has to trick himself.
He's lying to himself.
And it is a he.
Yeah, it's always
right?
a him.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never met any female white supremacist because there's a level of compassion in
pretty rare, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they are, they probably are that dumb traditional, like, well, I'm going to let my man speak up for me. he'll tell you why I'm superior.
Yeah, yeah.
And definitely with that exact accent, no matter where they are. They always sound like they're from the South. I was amazed, like, when I was in Alaska years ago, the really dumb people talking, I'm just like, how the fuck do you have a Southern accent in Alaska? And they're like, oh, it's just like a dumb rural thing.
Yeah.
Like, you picked it up from country music and whatever it is.
Well, when I see these kids in Indiana now, I mean, they've all had the internet.
Yeah.
I think they're all kind of homogenized to a degree.
Yeah.
To everything.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know.
And you still live in Indiana.
So I'm in Indianapolis and San Francisco.
You do both.
I do both.
Yeah. In San Francisco. So now I'm assuming you work tech.
Yes.
What do you do now?
So I run a web design business.
Okay.
And product development company. And I have two products right now.
Okay. What are your products?
One is called Publit. P-U-B-L-I-T.
Publit.
Publit. Like, okay. It's a portmanteau of publish and literature, okay?
Okay.
But it's, the web domain is publitdesign.com, and it's a personal website builder. So it allows you to really easily make a personal website.
This is great. I need to build a website.
Okay, well.
So I can go to this.
That's right.
Okay, tell me more. I'm listening.
Okay, all you got to do is sign up,
mm-hmm.
and you're effectively filling out a form, adding your beautiful face.
Sure.
Picking out colors, picking out a template. You're just clicking.
Right.
And then you press a button, and then boom, you have a website.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's actually really a good thing that people could use.
I think so. I mean, so it started because I had a friend of mine who was in a PhD program, and they all kind of need websites because they're trying to publish stuff and write.
Right.
And he asked me to make one, so I made one. And then I realized, oh, yeah, my dad is a professor, and he's always had terrible websites. And so I was like, okay, like, it's a hyper-competitive ecosystem.
Yeah.
And they need to market themselves. So it started as that. Then I realized, of course, like, for everyone else, like, more and more people want and need personal websites. So,
yeah.
Like, it's out and...
Is there competition in this?
Yeah, so there's tons of competition, but I think we hit like the right price point. It's about $80 a year as opposed to like $150 or $160.
Yeah, it's very reasonable.
Yeah, and then like, so we try to like cut it by half, and then we just have made it so that, like, I'm a designer, right? So I know like the complexity behind making something look as good as it possibly can, given like various browser widths and whatever people are using to like see your website.
Sure.
So I thought, it's in some of these systems, they're kind of forcing the user to like pick the right photo and like lay out the right everything.
Right.
And like, while that's like good and powerful and customizable, that's still like a design burden that like the user has. So what I did was, my team did, like my team prioritized making it stupidly easy. Like, you don't have to design, you don't have to program. It's none of that. It's like filling out a Google form.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. That, I mean, like, for me, that's like, I look at it and I'm like, people ask me questions.
Yeah.
Like, I just this year was like, I need to build a website. I started getting some things going, and then I'm just like, I don't even know where to begin. And when I ask friends who kind of know about that stuff, they're like asking me all these questions, and I'm just like, I don't even know what the fuck that means. So
yeah, well, Rick,
this could be good.
Yeah.
All right. And so, then what you said, you have another one. What's the other product?
I do have another one.
Yeah.
The other product is called Float. Okay.
Float.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what it does is it allows you to use your phone at eye level almost anywhere throughout the house. So it's a mount, but it's a very powerful mount, okay? It's like super powerful. I have it in my bag. I'm gonna show you in a second.
Okay.
But the way that it works is, the way that I used it and the way that it started was, I use my phone in the shower. I know that sounds crazy, but it's like I listen to podcasts or something and like—
How long do you shower?
Strangers. My fiance would probably disagree with the number I'm sharing with you, but I'll probably say like 10 minutes.
A 10-minute shower.
Yeah.
And you don't want to waste that time doing nothing.
I don't want to waste, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Well, what am I going to do, sing to myself?
Listen, you're a go-getter.
Right, so I'm listening to like podcasts, I'm reading a thing, I'm sending out an email that I need to send out. Whatever it is, I'm trying to like get things going.
Sure.
This is another way for me to do that, yeah.
Okay.
So when I was in my apartment in San Francisco, and like apartments in San Francisco are like, you know, they're pretty small relative to other places.
Yeah.
Right?
More expensive, smaller spaces. Yeah.
Right. So I'm in the Mission, and this was like a few years ago, like four or five years ago. And I have my phone like on a ledge, and I'd be listening to the podcast. It wasn't great because the speakers weren't as great, but you know, the phones weren't waterproof then. So like you're like precariously placing your phone somewhere. And
hoping for the best
and hoping that you're squeezing out a little edge, right? You're like, you're getting that extra info, right? And so one time I like dropped it, right? So it's inevitable. I was like switching from, you know, one podcast to another. I dropped it and I'm like panicked. I'm picking it up, throwing in a bag of rice or something, right?
The classic. Yeah.
I don't even know if that works, but that's what they say, right?
Yeah, I've had one person tell me it successfully worked. Yeah. I'm still,
it's like big rice.
Yeah.
Like they've promoted this idea.
They've tricked us long enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone needs it even if they don't need it. So anyway, so I stuck it in there, the phone was fine, but then I was like, I need to just make them out. Right? But then like suction cups are like trash, right? Like when you think of suction cups, they suck. Like,
yeah.
They're terrible, right?
Yeah, I mean, the amount of things I have for my children that—
Right.
You're like, it's got a suction cup on it and it literally works never.
That's right.
Yeah.
Never works. You always know, okay, there's like a 20% chance this is not gonna work, right? So what happened around that time was— It's like a bunch of coincidences. So I had a car in San Francisco, which was a terrible day. If you're moving to San Francisco, just don't have a car.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Public transportation exists.
Yeah, it's just a pain in the butt.
Yeah, parking's
everything's a pain if you have a car. So it normally always gets like the windows broken in. Like every 3 months, window breaks and you know, you go and fix it or you patch it, whatever it is. One time, I am like walking to the car and I see a bullet hole through it. Okay. So somebody had shot, there was a stray bullet that went through it. And I'm like, crap, like I'm gonna have to go and actually get this fixed just in case something's really wrong with it.
Right.
So I go to the repair shop and like, and I see these workers pulling up one of those heavy windshields with this like suction system.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what I need.
Right.
So I looked up what that manufacturer was. You know, they're like, this guy's crazy. You know, like, what is, like, who cares? You know, they're like, this guy's nuts. And I'm just like, okay, like, I just need to know, like,
what. I need your suction.
Yeah.
I need it for a different thing, but.
Listen, so these guys, like, think I'm crazy. I'm just like going there. I'm like, okay, I just want to know. And I find out that the manufacturer for this specific suction system is in Taiwan. Okay.
Okay.
They happen to have like the global patent on this like rubber formula and this, right? So they, so I called, I like emailed them, I called them up. They're like, yeah, we have our own products. Like, we're not going to sell you these parts.
Right.
Right. Like, why would we do that? And I was like, well, you could, you know, you could increase the price a little and I'll buy the parts. And so they were like, I don't know, man. You know, we don't really.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, I'll go to Taiwan next week. Would you be willing to meet with me? And they were like, this guy's a psycho. Just,
yeah, he's right? going to come here and murder us.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. They're American.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I show up in Taiwan, and they're the nicest people ever. Like the people at the company, they're like, you know, I spend the entire day with the president. He's like, yeah, you came all the way out here. Like, I'll sell them to you.
Right. Wow.
So I, you know, at that time that, so I'm like getting all this together. And then, during that time, it's like Airbnb was like starting and like, I had a spare bedroom. So I like rented out the room every once in a while. And it, you know, there was a time when like, it wasn't like the big business that it was. It was like there was a time, especially in San Francisco, where like you're meeting these interesting people from all over the world. They're coming to a conference, and I was like, this is like awesome because you're just, you know, you're meeting these interesting people who like do all sorts of random things.
Right.
And I met this guy, Tyler, who was staying at my place, and he was one of these guys from Tennessee who like worked on a car when he was a kid. You know, like yeah. really hands-on. Like I knew these kids growing up, right?
Yeah, man, me too.
Super handy. And he had, he was like, what are you working on? And I showed him and he, you know, he pulled out his software and just like put it all together and we 3D printed out after that, like thousands of these like 3D printed out, like you know, proto products, right?
Right.
And then, but at the time, the phone was still not waterproof.
Right.
So what crazy person is going to buy this thing for your shower when your phone's not waterproof? And like at that time, I don't know if you remember, you're like freaked out about your phone ever getting wet, right?
Drop of rain, anything.
Something, right?
Full panic, yeah.
Yeah, full on. So I was like, oh, I'm going to just get shelved this for a little bit. And then, I don't know. I always go to like these like tech websites or whatever, and there was a publishing on Mac rumors, and it was like Julie Clover was the author. I'm gonna give her credit, but she had published this article that was like the new iPhone. I think it's iPhone 7. I think it was 7. iPhone 7 is gonna be water resistant, and I was like, I gotta move on this.
Yeah.
Right. So I like went out, found like the plastics manufacturer in America, because they could do it really fast and turnaround's really good.
Right.
So I like built this product. Let me show you. So it is. Oh yeah, you can keep this.
Whoa.
Yeah. But if you don't like it, because like half the my brother doesn't even use it because he takes 4 minute showers.
Right.
Right. But like my fiance used it at the mirror because she's like doing her makeup and like
right
a video. So anyway, so this is the product. I'm gonna rip this off for you, but basically that's what it looks like.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's like, so then like this is like a not such a, but if you see, it's like a super, like I'm lifting up the table, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So it's like a, yeah,
and then you.
Oh yeah!
Wow.
So it looks like that.
What causes it to the suction to work like that?
It, so basically there's this. Okay, so we're getting a patent on this lever.
Okay.
And the way that it works is, well, where's your phone? Here, give me your phone. So the lever is like, the lever is meant to, like, prevent you from using the device incorrectly. Right. So like it's kind of, you know, it's like sticking out. So you can't use it unless the lever is like engaged. Right.
Right.
So it has to be engaged. And when it's engaged and then you hear that snap, there's like a like a permanent like vacuum seal that it's like concave, right?
Right.
So that just locks it in and it could stay there for months.
Wow.
Right. I mean, it could stay there for a year, but we like tell people to like change it in and out.
Yeah.
So then you're like here and like that's how you use it at eye level. So like what, you know, it's like angled 10 degrees because we measured like you don't want it to be too high up because then your arm, you have to move your arm. Like we want to make it as easy to use as possible. Like imagine the laziest person you know.
Okay, I'm picturing me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Rick doesn't want to raise his arm.
No.
Like a Nazi.
Yeah. You know? It's a bad plan.
It's a bad plan. So you want to make it, you know, accessible through your arm, but then visually accessible as well.
Right. Right?
So we just kind of like found this correct point. And then, you know, you could use your device. Oh, there's your...
Yep.
There's your kid. We won't show people your kid.
Yeah.
But you could watch your kid
right
every day when you shower.
Right.
But you can use it like this. You can use it like this.
So you can watch movies or whatever it is the kids are watching.
Whatever you want to watch.
YouTube videos,
that's
I guess.
That's right. That's right.
TikToks,
all sorts of stuff.
God so damn that's kids. Wow.
So that's how it works.
That's rad.
And so you have a kid, I'm sure you could use two extra arms.
Yeah.
And so like imagine, you know, I don't know, your family calls and like your kid's in your arm and you're trying to brush your teeth and
right.
You know, this is something that
that's a beneficial product.
That's right.
I don't like that you're doing things that people could actually use for good.
Yeah, well,
what's the deal with that? Are you
okay? It is made out of plastic.
Okay, good.
Okay. But
oh no.
It's multi-use and you could use it for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, hopefully.
God damn it.
Right?
But so, if we throw it in the ocean, could it kill something?
A lot of turtles.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot
yeah.
of people don't realize how fucked up the turtles are, and they're ruining this planet. Wow, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
So it seems like you've got decent things going on.
We're trying to do a lot. We're trying to do as much as we can.
And so this is something you can buy...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you can buy it at buyfloat.com. BUYFLOAT.
Buyfloat.com.
Yeah.
And who designed that website?
We designed it.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I figured. Yeah. Using all your skills to help yourself.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And is there other things you want to promote?
I'm going to. I have a YouTube channel.
Okay.
That. Where I'm taking everything I've learned over the last 15 years from college to national fellowships to tech design to startups. I'm just like condensing it all and I'm just gonna put it all out there.
Nice.
So I'm planning on putting out more and more.
Okay. Get the content out.
But I think it's like, you know, I think, you know, I'm very comfortable now with like my with design, especially like software design. And there's not that many channels, I think, that review software design. Like, you know, there's a bunch of people who review iPhones or
sure.
the latest computer. But so I'm eventually going to make the channel about that. But I want to like put in everything as much as possible.
Okay. And your websites, again, the two that...
Yeah. So one is publitdesign.com.
Yep.
PUBLITdesign.com. And the other one's Buyfloat, BUYFLOAT.com.
Okay.
And yeah, you can just search for me on Google or YouTube for YJHEO.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great, man. Well, thank you. I think that's the time we have, but I appreciate it, man. That's cool. Yeah, very interesting, man.
Thanks
the whole
so much
story
for
is very, very interesting.
It's a little weird. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so none of it
yeah,
matters.
I mean,
right?
You're a huge disappointment to your parents, despite
failure.
Whatever success. They yeah. probably can't even really explain the successful things that you've done to where their friends would be impressed by it.
I mean, I think I just made this maybe to like So despite my mother, who really hates when anyone takes long showers, she just hates it.
Yeah.
So I think I might, maybe like in the back of my
mind. If you're going to act disappointed, I'm going to give you something to be disappointed about.
That's right.
That's nice. See, now that I know there's levels of spite, I don't feel as angry about you doing great things.
I don't know if you can characterize them as great, but...
Listen, you're making actual things in the world. That's, you know... It's more than most people are doing.
Well, I'll have you call my mom after this.
Dude, perfect. Yeah. I'm great with moms. They typically, after talking to me, they're going to be more than impressed with what you've done. That's really my gift to the world. It can always, hey, at least he's not that guy. That's what I give to the world.
We'll see.
All right. Well, thanks for being on, man. Check it all out. And keep listening. We're getting close to the end of the season for Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. So keep listening, keep rating, even if you hate us. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And thanks for being on. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please DM Ingram Pod on Twitter. That's INGRAHAM Pod on Twitter. Special thanks to The Comedy Store and to Brian Rips for the dope-ass music.